Lucky Jim, the antic and mildly scandalous first novel by Kingsley Amis, alerted British readers to the presence of a comedic genius. A generation later, they were gasping again, this time over The Rachel Papers, the first novel by Martin Amis. Both father and son continue to produce memorable fiction. Kingsley's The Anti-Death League, Girl 20, and The Old Devils, Martin's Einstein's Monsters, Money, and Time's Arrow. Now Martin has written Experience, a memoir. It documents the lifelong, loving relationship between father and son, as well as their literary differences. Steve Paulson asked Martin Amis if his father read all his books.
He read the first one, the third one, and then the, whatever it is, Time's Arrow, the seventh or whatever it is. And he attempted to read a couple of others. London Fields was dedicated to him and was my sort of, you know, big novel at that time. And despite the fact that my mother stood over him with a knife, he only managed to get about 20 pages into it. You know, he used to say all sorts of things throughout our life together. He said, it's too much like hard work. Too much like hard work, he said. And that's, he found my prose too much like hard work.
At what point did your father start to take you seriously as a literary person, as someone he could talk to about literature?
We had two relationships, really. We had father and son, and we had a kind of literary friendship as well. I mean, we did talk about writing and writers, poets mainly, but about technique and how you represent speech and little points of expertise. I date the beginning of that literary friendship to a day when I was 17, and I just started to get literary, in fact, and to take an interest in books. And I said, come up and see my books, because I'd amassed a few while I'd been away at school in this boarding crammer. And he, groaning a bit because it was three floors up, he came up and had a look at my books. And I felt he was looking at me in a different way. And suddenly I was someone he could chat to in a way I hadn't been before.
In your memoir, you reprint some very funny letters that you wrote to your father and his second wife when you were away at school in your late teens. And I have to say, they're not like the letters I used to write home. You were very clever in these letters. And
also sort of toe-curlingly verbose and, and you know, foppish and posturing.
In one letter, you write about wanting your own apartment, and you throw in one line about needing your own place so you can screw girls, which is not the kind of thing that sons usually tell their fathers.
Well, he was very permissive for the time on that question. You know, he, not so much in his second marriage, but he was an incredibly energetic adulterer, my father. He lived for adultery. And I think he was just excited by the idea of, the contiguousness of yet more promiscuity coming from the direction of his two sons.
Well, you laugh about it now, but that must have been pretty tough for you as a kid when your two parents split apart.
Oh, yeah, it was. And it was when my mother told me that they were separating, I very definitely felt, I was 12 years old, 13 years old, I very definitely felt that, I'd done the easy bit, and now I was acquainted with, the more painful side of life, and innocence was over and experience was beginning.
Many years later, you say that one way you and your father really came together was when you were going through your own divorce. And both of you had kids, had gone through this with young children. Was he a good person to talk to?
He was the best person to talk to. He was the, ultimately appropriate person to talk to because he knew exactly what was involved. It was his last fatherly duty in a way because he didn't have that long to live and he didn't need it, my marriage breaking up. But he, of course, instantly accepted me in my new reality. And he said the best thing you can say about it. Well, he said he would always say, talk as much as you like about it or as little as you like about it. And I talked a lot about it. And he said, you'll never get over this. Don't think that you will. All you can do is coexist peacefully with it. But those painful moments are just, you know, they never go away. They're just there. And I'll never forget that, and I think it's true.
And to some degree, the guilt would always be there, that you had done something bad to your kids.
Yeah, I mean, to spell it out, what I'd done to my kids is what he had done to me, which is makes you question love, makes you cautious about love, perhaps diminishes your capacity to feel love because you're going to get hurt. And that's what you do when you absent yourself from your children, the daily life of your children. You damage their capacity to love.
Did your relationship with your father change once he became sick, once he started to die?
It was a very cruel death in that what Kingsley was preeminently was an engine of comedy and a genius with words, and those were the two ways that his strokes attacked him. His vocabulary kind of seized up. He was reduced to commonplaces and tautologies. And, you know, even more awfully, he lost humor. He says in one of his novels, you know, the rewards of being sane aren't necessarily many, but knowing what's funny is one of them. And he was kind of nuts towards the end and didn't find things funny anymore and couldn't tell when things were meant to be funny. And, you know, it was almost like something in a novel in that he became an anti-Kingsley, you know, an opposite Kingsley. You know, I quote the Larkin line about death where it says, being brave means not scaring others. And he did actually a pretty good job at that. I mean, he was alarming and very unpredictable. But he'd always made an effort, a very phobic man, he'd always made a huge effort not to show fear in front of his children.
Even though he had many fears, you say that he couldn't stand being alone, especially at night. He couldn't fly in an airplane. His life was full of phobias.
That's right. And when we were children, he took us with my mother to the top of the Empire State Building and said afterwards, I'm not sure how long afterwards, but he said it was only our presence there that stopped him from screaming. And I call it in the book the Empire State Effect, and it worked even through his last illness.
We've talked a lot about your relationship with your father, but you are a father yourself. In fact, it's probably fair to say that you've gone through several phases of fatherhood, two sons from your first marriage, a girl you discovered was your daughter only many years after she was born, and now you have two young daughters in your second marriage. Has fatherhood changed for you? Has it gotten easier?
I certainly find the girls, the little girls, easier than the little boys were, partly because they're girls and partly because I can afford a nanny. I suppose I'm less anxious now. I know that when they're ill, they're going to pull through. I mean, there's a huge difference between your first and second child. The first one, you check every 5 minutes to make sure he's not dead. The other one can be coughing his head off, and you think, to hell with him, you know, he'll be fine doing some. He'll pull through. He's all, you know, he's just faking. But I, you know, it's different. The big difference is that your feeling for your sons and daughters is, you know, absolutely on the same level, but it's from a different part of the heart, and a father feels sort of extra protective of little girls. And I find that, you know, actually quite hard to manage sometimes, and find myself twisting around with unpleasant imaginings of them coming to harm or having a fall or being hit by a car. And I really have to make an effort not to lose myself in these terrible thoughts and twist around, wince. So it does get easier, but these new little problems emerge, you know, in your feelings about them.
Now that you've had children yourself, are you any more sympathetic to your father as he was a father to you?
I say that the instant your children are born, you forgive your parents everything. Like a velvet revolution, any little lingering beefs you had with your parents completely evaporate because you see the extent of what you have to do and the responsibility you have to take on when you have a child. And you realize, you think, Christ, you mean they did all this for me?
Martin Amis is the author of several novels and Experience, a memoir of his father, Kingsley Amis. He spoke with Steve Paulson.